Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm Tim in the remodeled rugby dungeon with JB.
Who's not globally important, I might add.
Oh, more on that in a bit. And Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Firstly, we're 5 years in now. We need to have someone to push those buttons for you. So anyone watching...
Like a minion of some sort.
Yeah, a minion of some kind. In fact, if you would like to be our minion, get in touch.
It's so hot in here. So what you'll have to do is you press the red button, and then you scurry out and you bring us cold towels.
Anyone who was watching on social media, online, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, Periscope, YouTube, whatever, Facebook, anyone who was watching will have got a very close-up, uncomfortably close-up
view.
Very
uncomfortable, yeah.
So, yeah, anyway.
But now JB is sitting comfortably in the...
Diane Abbott chair?
Well, the chair that Tim just described as, like...
Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet in Titanic.
Paint me.
I want you to paint
draw me like one of your French players.
Which French player would you want a painting of?
Maxime Machinot.
100%. No doubt there, Phil.
Definitely.
You're a little bit too quick.
I want to be... But I'd want to be painted by Baptiste Seran.
He is an artist.
Did you see his catch behind the posts?
Behind his back.
Behind his back.
Post. Classic. Just
outrageous.
Classic.
Yeah.
He's Toulon.
To one now.
Great little signing up.
Right. I've got to share this with you. We got a letter.
A letter?
I've just got a screen grab off. I'm going to get the email because I want to get this person's name right. But this is one of the proudest things that I think this is one of the great legacies of our time doing this podcast together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we've had some good legacies, haven't we? Some of the live show visits from around the world.
Oh yeah.
Coming to see us made me very, very happy.
Wow, the chap, I forget his name.
Was it Roberto?
Roberto coming from Chile.
Oh no, so Roberto from Chicago.
No, Roberto from Chicago coming to London for the day.
Yeah.
To come to a live show.
Yeah. And our friend from Chile, whose name I cannot remember.
Is it the Twitter one? Is it a message from Twitter?
No. It's from Robin Hazelhurst.
Okay.
Hello, Robin.
He's got in touch. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Let me read this to you. Gentlemen, I've been listening to you for a few years now, and it turns out you're a bunch of bastards who've screwed up my life. 5 years
okay.
ago, 5 years ago, I decided I was too old, fat, and slow, so I gracefully retired from my beloved sport of rugby at the age of 40. Then I listened to you chaps for a few years and decided that I was still old and slow, but what the hell, I still want to play. So at the age of 45, I found myself training with the Estonian national team and the British Army while wearing a green and yellow LTB T-shirt with Glass. Fig jam on the back. So that's why our Aussie coach hates me. Long and short, a few years ago, I thought I'd never hold an oval ball in my hands again. Now I'm on the fringes of gaining my first international cap.
Wow!
While training with serious players and frontline soldiers, soldier boys, literally half my age. And it's all your fault for being so seductive in my ears about the sport we love.
I'll take it.
I've lost several kilos and half a tooth this year from restarting training. I'm in the form of my life, you bastards.
Well, congratulations, Mr. Hazelhurst.
Can't express how grateful I am. If you ever want to come to a fifth-tier international match or a Finnish league game in Estonia, I'd be happy to host you for that too.
Do I?
Yes, absolutely.
That's wonderful, Robin.
Yeah, amazing stuff.
Well, we'll look out for... Well, That's just another set of results that we're going to have to read out over Six Nations time now.
Also,
Estonia this week.
I know I could have waited till nearer Christmas, but as I've just come from the AJ Bell Stadium.
Amazing stadium, right?
I've got you in it. Do you know what? I have to say, it was rammed and the traffic cleared incredibly quickly.
They've got it sorted.
They've actually got it sorted. Probably 4 years too late.
Mr. Mason, Mr. Orange, Mr. Diamond, these guys know how to run a rugby club.
Yeah. Still, I'd like some pubs nearby, but nevertheless...
They've just built you one, and they're building an Aldi, so you can do your shopping.
They are. There you go, JB. Every Sale Sharks fan should have a Sale Sharks scarf.
It's so thoughtful.
They were dishing them out.
I've already got one.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as a neutral, sometimes you get cold. But thank you very much. I'll put it somewhere.
Okay.
Pride of place. Yes.
Do you know what? I've got a question I want to kick off the podcast with. Yeah, oh, it is. There you go. Put it on the table in the rugby dungeon.
Thank you.
A question. If we got an election this week. Good luck to your brother as well, Phil.
Fingers crossed for Robert.
Yep.
Fingers crossed for Robert Largan, a fine gentleman.
Let's hope he gets that pension.
But something topical and rugby related. If you were going to pick someone from the UK and Northern Ireland to be a rugby prime minister, who would you pick?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, I think probably Mark McCall. Very, very competent, ran a great organisation for a number of years, and currently is desperate to get out of Europe. So I think all those things combined, he'll get it done.
I was thinking someone with leadership, so someone with incredible history of leadership. Sorry, there's two men that jumped out. One who's just retired in Rory Best, and another who is a former player but far more famous for being a coach and for developing young talent, changing things in the area, working within a budget and staying financially strong.
Steve Diamond.
Rob Baxter.
Rob Baxter's a good one.
Love listening to Rob Baxter speak.
Yeah, the two most insightful, sort of not charismatic, well, they are charismatic, but that's not their defining feature. There's too much impressive guys I've spoke to. I think Ackerman for Gloucester is an incredible guy. No matter what government I had, I'd want him doing something.
President of South Africa.
Dorman. Yeah,
Dorman. anything.
Yeah, security.
Any definitely. Job he wants, he can have. And the other is also a South African. Dr. Brendan Venter.
Oh, yeah.
He's just an incredible mind.
And Khaleesi, if we're talking about South African leaders.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Khaleesi was incredible.
Like if you were going to hand it for rugby, yeah. But if we were sticking UK and
UK,
Ireland,
yeah.
I'd throw into the mix, kind of in a sort of Trump, like Boris Johnson fashion, someone who clearly very talented and intelligent, but also a bit maverick in a way that some people don't like, Austin Healey.
Austin Healey's a genius. I honestly think he's a genius. Like, he might not be everyone's cup of tea, but he's bloody good at almost everything he does.
Yeah, and some of his analysis, he often sees something that other pundits don't.
All the time.
Yeah.
All of the time. The only thing which gets me a little bit is he keeps on talking about scrimmaging in a negative way. I mean, I found that this...
A lot of people are doing that recently. It's getting more and more fed up with how long it takes. Not the number of resets, but how long it takes to do any individual reset.
That's the time when you get up and put the kettle on. Or, you don't... they don't need to rush this thing.
When the clock's ticking...
The clock ticking is annoying. Yeah, I agree with that.
It's very unlike you, JB, but I think you're swimming against the tide on this one.
Yeah. Well, so if you watch an NFL game, that's 3 hours. That's a good time to have a few beers with your friends and whatnot. If anything, rugby goes too quickly. I think we need a longer half time so you can get more stuff done within that half time, like get your food out or...
Have a three-course dinner.
Yeah, something like that. Because with the NFL, it's ideal because it starts, it stops, you have a few drinks, and then it starts again. It's really, really good. Rugby, it's just go, 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 go. It needs to somehow spread out.
So I could get on board with the spreading out if the solution to the scrum problem is stop the clock.
Yeah, you've got two competing things here. What does it look like as a sporting contest? Undoubtedly, that's a shorter, snappier contest with quicker scrums, yada, yada, yada. What does it look like as an entertainment vehicle, which is basically what the NFL is? And I think that could be actually expanded.
My issue with the length of time it takes to set a scrum, and it has got longer. It has got longer.
Teams use it.
They do. And the issue I have with it is it's stopping the amount of fatigue, which actually is when holes open up.
And that is fair.
more tries and better tries are scored.
I mean, I can't say I've noticed a substantial increase in time. I've noticed a substantial increase in moaning about it, but not really of the time.
Yeah, it does seem about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, it seemed to increase. It might still be increasing.
I think it is.
It is noticeable.
Front row stand there, the props stand there for a good 10, 15 seconds before they even bind onto the hooker. The second rows don't bind on at the same time as the props. They wait till...
Yeah.
It all takes ages.
If you watch games from the 80s...
crazy, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
They're like... It's like 5 seconds. The ball goes down, they're already forming.
It's one of those weird things, right, where I think... Although all these changes have been made for safety, and I think actually they've probably been largely successful, because only a few years ago we were talking about a game of rugby suddenly ending because everyone had no more necks left. We don't have that chat now. Maybe that's because concussion is the new thing to be really concerned about. But it used to be scrummaging there all the time. Necks, backs, yeah, all the time. With all these changes, it's just made people more and more specialists. So back in the day, you didn't have to be an absolute giant of a man. You didn't have to look like Kuhn Oosthuizen or someone like that to play. You could literally play it and look relatively normal. But now it's just developed into this thing where you've got to be a perfect box shape and you've got to be unbelievably strong.
And you are specialised in a tight head or a loose head.
Yeah,
which is
amazing.
Yeah, there's very few these days who can do both.
Kuhn Oosthuizen?
On the Austin Healey one, so he's done an article in The Telegraph, which was quite entertaining. I don't agree with all of these, but he says the headline, "The Premiership is boring and needs rescuing. Here's my 10-point plan to save English rugby."
Oh, yes, please.
One is speeding up the scrums. Two, ban box kicking outside the 22.
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Three, actually implement the law that says you have to play it within 5 seconds.
And get the referees actually saying use it when the ball's available.
When the ball's available.
Yeah, because...
Not when it's right at the back foot.
I don't think the referees know about that. They say use it as if use it is now 5 seconds, or five seconds, use it.
That's how it is done. Yeah. They say use it, and it's 5 seconds from then.
Yeah.
Because use it is supposed to be the trigger to signal that the ball is now available.
Or if they say it, ooze.
They say it 5 seconds after the ball has become available.
Yeah. Interesting.
Introduce a mid-season break in January. Reduce the number of games.
Yes.
Give the media more access.
Yes.
Embrace the risk takers. So it uses the example Freddie Burns over Reece Priestland at Bath. We'll get on to Bath.
Well, I mean, that's a coach's decision, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't like to be picking your team, then a phone call comes in from the league.
Yeah.
I see you've picked Mr. Priestland this week.
No, more exciting.
he promises to try harder.
Can you play Rocco Dugouni at number 8 as well?
No, I don't like that.
Celebrate the characters that get hidden away or maybe don't fit into the stereotypical mould like Ellis Genge or Danny Cipriani.
Israel Folau.
This is the crazy one.
Those two are pretty celebrated.
Yeah. I mean, they could be more celebrated, could they?
These two are just like trying to get a rise. Automatic yellow card for wingers who sprint across the pitch to pat forwards on the back for winning a scrum pen.
I like that.
and finally, an automated sin bin system. If no tries scored after 10 minutes, both sides reduce to 14 men, down to 13 after 20.
No, don't want that.
I'd like to see a game played with that, because it'd be quite exciting. I don't want that to be the regular format of rugby.
I'd like an NHL like fighting system where just if two players go at it, let them at it. All the other players form a circle, shout, fight.
I've got a few. We've talked about it many times. Eliminate the knock on, except for within the opposite. Within the 5 meters.
Okay.
Another one. If you don't compete at a line out, it doesn't matter if it goes straight.
Yeah, I'm
down with that.
I'm happy with that.
What's the one I thought of today? If you duck into a tackle, you can no longer get done for a penalty if you're the tackling player doing a seatbelt tackle.
Okay.
So as soon as you... to make sure that you're... You know, if you're running upright and someone takes your head off, you know, obviously that's a yellow card or whatnot. But if you're ducking into it, maybe there's an element of... Maybe don't do that.
Yeah.
And I had another one. I really should write these down if I know I'm doing the podcast on a Sunday.
Put it in our book.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Right, so one other thing I saw that I thought you'd appreciate today when I was at the AJ Bell Stadium. So where I have a monitor, and when it's in the break at halftime and stuff, there's a feed that I can watch, which is looking at the players' changing rooms.
Oh, yeah, okay.
His camera's looking in the changing rooms.
Who's in there?
Oh, so I was watching the Exeter one. I was watching both, but okay. I was watching the Exeter one. And Rob Baxter was having a chat, and Henry Slade was drinking his drinking a can of drink or whatever, And he did a double tap on his shoulder when he finished the drink before he put it down on the table.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, some people have the left hand drinking Buffalo.
Yeah.
But I went to Exeter Uni. And so I think it might be something down in Exeter. At Exeter, when you finish the drink, you have to double tap the glass on your shoulder before you put the glass down.
I've not heard of that one.
Henry Slade did that even when he was listening to Rob Baxter while knocking back his energy drink at halftime.
That's a safe than sorry.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You'd be in a lot of trouble if Rob Baxter was doing his
team talk. See it off,
oi! Slade. Not now, Slade.
There's a lot to talk about this weekend. Let's get straight into the rugby, right, and we'll get into some news in a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
And I reckon we should take this pull by pull, because this weekend is one of those where things really start to take shape, don't they?
Yeah. And not only that, I don't know if you guys felt this. Did you feel that all the teams feel like they've sort of warmed up now? They're a little bit more in tune with European rugby, and it just went off.
Some definitely did. Some. So, like, we'll get into the specific game, but Ulster, who were going into unbeaten, stayed unbeaten, playing against Quins, who have up to this point been one of the worst teams in the tournament, and Ulster did not look like the better team playing at home on that day.
Well, we don't have to do the pulls in order. We can start with that pull.
Okay.
Because you're right, that's one of the most interesting.
It certainly is, and that I say is the only pool where the unbeaten team, or the only unbeaten team, is not the favourite to win that pool.
Yes.
Because Ulster are on 12 points. They've not got any bonus points from their three wins. No. Clermont are on 11 points with two wins and one loss, but they've picked up three bonus points doing that.
And they get to have Ulster come to their place.
Quins and Bath are out of it. So it's going to be three wins for Clermont in the next three games, and they are going to top that group.
I like Ulster. I like a lot of things that they do. My problem with them is they feel like a team that needs to be 100% fit to be competitive. If you start, you know, going down to that second prop or that third second row, I don't even know if you've got three second rows. have you got three?
Kieran Treadwell.
There are three. Somewhere in the club.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. As long as they're fit, they're competitive.
Billy Burns playing with a hamstring.
He's looking all right, but you're right, he's playing on one leg.
He is, which is good because Cooney kicks sticks, which is very important.
Mm.
But Addison not playing, which means that Stockers, yeah, Addison being banned for 4 weeks, but Stockers played 15, and that does, it changes the dynamic a little bit. It actually changed the dynamic a bit to the point where McCloskey was hanging out on the wing quite a lot, and it worked very well, both for the Reedy try and McCloskey's try, but he made so much ground through the middle, running at Langers and Smith, that you want him there.
I don't know why that boy doesn't get more credit. I mean, in my mind, he's looking like a Jamie Roberts, like peak Jamie Roberts, maybe more powerful in the carry, truth be told.
He had a great game. Going against those two, Langers and Smith are pretty small 10-12 combo.
But he does it against everyone, to be fair.
Yeah, he was the best player on the park. He was the best Ulster player on the park. Best player on the park was probably Don Brant.
Yeah,
I feel like, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like he was very, very good about 4 years ago. Sort of dipped off the last two, and now he's kind of sort of coming back at it again.
He's on a good run of form. Yeah.
And he's some way down the depth chart. And I think Clermont are comfortably the best team. They just had a really bad night in Belfast, and they're actually haven't gone through the gears yet. They haven't clicked, but I think it will take a little bit of time. Benjamin.
Well, they've only had one home game, haven't they?
Yes, but they haven't been doing that well in the top 14 either. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of World Cup players come back.
Yeah.
Ben Kayser spoke to him at the rec on Friday. What?
With his gloves.
His yellow gloves, by the way.
Oh, now, you were next to Ben Kayser. Now, what were they? Were they leather?
And They were.
And are these available from the Clermont store?
No, they're not. I don't think they're Clermont. I had a little sneaky peek.
Really?
So he picked the gloves as Clermont colours, but not a Clermont brand.
I think they had like a sort of wool or fur sort of inside, not fur, they kind of had some sort of...
Yeah, lamb's wool, it'll be something
lamb's
like
lamb's wool inside, leather outside.
Nice.
Bright yellow.
So I've got a lovely pair of gloves, which I wear usually to sell shocks. And... do you know what I'd love more than anything? One team to take menswear really seriously. Like high-end leather gloves, like yellow Clermont gloves or, you know, whatever your team is. Silk scarves. I just want real pocket squares. Things like that. Because ultimately, they're all done. They're all provided for by, I think, Wasps' Pins and Stripes. It used to be, or TM Lewin or whoever it is. Charles Tirrett does a lot of them. It's not hard. Just get some stuff in.
So one of my favourite bits of rugby attire that I own... I've got a Toulouse tie.
I love that tie.
Which is superb. And it's until the last inch, a bit like the Egg Chasers rugby tie. Very you can't tell that it's a Toulouse tie. It's just got a tiny little logo right down at the bottom, and the rest of it is the classic red, black, white and grey.
I seem to remember awesome. Stade Francais having some really nice ties.
French teams will be the place that would have well, of course, sartorial elegance.
Absolutely.
Well, of course, the bow tie, the Eden Park bow tie, is Racing Metro, I think.
Yeah.
And they just come out in blazers. That's just stuff, isn't it?
Great. Yeah.
But Ben Kayser was saying they're going through a bit of a transition. They've lost a couple of leaders out of that side and they're building. But I think they're comfortably the best team in the pool. I don't think Ulster are that good. They've done very well to squeeze out a win, particularly this one where they did not play well. And Quinn should have put them away.
Quinn's are, aren't they?
It was interesting because equally, at the point where Louis Luddick almost scores, where Danny Kerr,
what a turnaround that was,
Danny Kerr tracks back, and that would have put Ulster two scores ahead.
Yeah.
And then 20 seconds later, there's the Dom Brandt intercept, and then
that was all or nothing. That was yellow card.
It was.
And penalty try, or try the other way.
And I thought the ref handled it very well to let it play. They scored the try. Elia scored the try, and then went back to check, and it was right. It was right on the boundary, but Dom Brandt was onside, and as he did repeatedly through that game, he just timed his run to absolute perfection. More in offence, because the lines that he picks, I mean, he is a big, powerful boy.
He is.
But what he does even better is the lines that he picks are so intelligent. So
intelligent.
So good.
And quite a lot like Nick Easter in that sense. Like, actually, yes, there might be quicker, there might be stronger, but he's got a real rugby brain. He's got to be in the England squad. And that pains me to say because he's in my fantasy rugby draft team. That means I'll be without him for a few weeks. But I think he's got to be part of the Six Nations squad.
He was superb.
Yeah.
And I'll say, so these two teams are not historically known for their physicality. There were some massive hits going in this game from both sides. It was brilliant to see. There were two moments of massive man being dominated by massive man. And the two were Kunitani broke through and Hendo just grabbed him and slammed him down and just said, no, stop there. And the other one was Dom Brandt on his opposite number, Kurt Seer. And he manhandled Kurt Seer in the second half. Yeah. That was impressive.
That was impressive. The thing that really bothered me about this was Paul Gustard after the game.
Why?
Because he was saying, oh, we really pushed them there, didn't we? We gave them a real run for their money. Like, what are you saying? You're Quinn. You're Harlequins.
Right, I'm gonna,
you just blew it.
Yeah, they lost it.
I've never said this previously, but I'll say it now. A problem I have with Gustard is, I think he brings a lot of the Saracens' facade, but there doesn't seem to be anything behind it backing it up.
Yeah, you scratch the surface.
Yeah, I don't think he's capable of, on his own, repeating what they did at Saracens. I'm not sure many men are. So it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not necessarily a massive.
Because it's not one man, is it? It's not one man. Yeah. It's a whole organisation. I think he's outstanding. I was just disappointed, and I'm sure he was hurting, and I'm sure he did see it that they blew it. But like, I think you've got to come out and say that because the message it sends.
Good enough, boys.
We gave him a really good run for their money there.
My Gustard moment this week was, I think it was before the game, he got asked about Kyle Sinclair playing his first game since the World Cup final. Yes. Was lined up to play the previous week and dropped out. And he said, so the question was something like, how important is it to have such a talented player back? And Gustard's response was, his first line was, well, first and foremost, he's an amazing human.
Yeah. What? Well,
what? I didn't care. Huh? Paul, I don't want to know about the charity works. I want to know about how he is going to help Quinns win this game.
First of all, what? What is wrong with these directors of rugby?
He's a brilliant tight head prop. He's got the best hands in the league. Talk about his amazing off the pitch stuff another time. Let's talk about the rugby.
Yeah, when Ray Lewis was busy sacking quarterbacks, no one cared that he did charity work.
So yeah, that just didn't like that.
Yeah,
I hate that stuff. I hate it so much. Because it's just, it's a way to throw off the interviewer, isn't it? It's just these stock answers.
No, I think he meant it genuinely.
He means it genuinely, it's interesting, but it's just a weird response.
I didn't really pick up on that. What I picked up on from his response is how he quickly went, he's one of many great players in the team.
Yeah.
I'm reading lots into that. And what I'm reading, I was reading all sorts of making stuff up in my head going, I think that means Sinclair's going to be leaving.
Ooh.
Not that I can't imagine Quinns would want him to leave, but the salary cap world we're in.
I think if
you only had the cap space to keep Don Brandt or Sinclair at their market value, I'd go for Don Brandt. It's a tough call, though.
I'd want to keep them both.
Problem is, you just don't get many tight head props that can do what he does.
Yeah.
And there's probably loads of Don Brandts. I mean, they're probably not quite like Don Brandt, but you're more likely to get one.
But if Quinns lose Sinclair, then I think it exactly the reason why what Saracens did has distorted things is what we're talking about with Sinclair.
I think Sinclair is more of a rare talent. And I think Don Brandt, actually, for the team, he will do more, as in he will score more tries, get more points, make more yards. But there are fewer... I think that was the point you were just making, Jay.
Yeah.
There are fewer Sinclairs than there are Don Brandts, and you can always pick up a Ruan Ackerman or a John O'Ross type player from South Africa who will be 90% of a Don Brandt.
Yeah.
Should we just do next week's fixtures in this pool briefly then? Because Quinns, as you point out, are at home to Ulster.
They've said, Gustav did say, he will go full strength and try and win this game, put in a good performance at home.
And I can see them winning at home.
If both teams play like they did, Quinns will win that game.
Yeah.
Which is worrying for Ulster because they are going to be second in this group. They are going to lose to Clermont away. If they lose more than that one game,
they could miss out.
They've not picked up the bonus points either.
Yeah.
They've got to get a win out of this game. And that puts one foot in. And the problem for Ulster is, so you can get into the last eight, unless Ulster get a home fixture, their journey into the last eight ends there.
Why are we doing fixtures for next week? Because we've not spoke about the other game yet.
And Bath will get their ass, because we've talked about Quinns Ulster, and really that's the only result that matters. Because
no,
Bath will get their ass handed to them by Clermont.
Correct.
Mm.
But Friday night at the Rec again, very disappointing.
I want to talk about something else in this game. Which kind of links into the Gustod thing, which he's an amazing human.
Oh, the Bath-Clermont game. Yeah.
What is all that about? What is all the, it's not globally important?
You're talking about the post-match chat?
I am exactly talking about that.
So, yeah, I effectively said, how concerning is it, the manner of the defeat? Because, yes, Clermont are good, but you've got some star players and you're at home.
And this was to Stuart Hooper after they were in the game after 65 minutes and capitulated.
And you, as you point out, you picked up on him saying it's not globally concerning.
What does that even mean? Okay, first of all, when was the last time that Bath Rugby Club did anything of global concern? I mean, is this something he has to deal with on a regular basis? If Bath lose a lineout, is that of global concern?
I don't think he was saying it doesn't matter compared to climate change.
Yeah. There's Donald Trump and then there's Bath Squad.
Kim Jong-un, Trump.
I
don't want to talk about the game. There is, in Syria, there is civil war.
That's not globally important.
So I do think he means global in the other manner.
Yeah. As in overall.
Overall to a specific organisation.
Well, I wish you'd have followed up. Like, is it regionally important? Locally important? Importance in the team? Where is it important? What is he doing talking in this manner? It's interesting.
That is like NBA management speak.
Isn't it? The guy seems to be drowning in the weight of the responsibility of managing Bath, in my opinion. It's very, very concerning. And even though I don't think he's up to it, I could be proved wrong. It's very, very
early days.
Bath do seem to have something about them. I mean, there are little sparks here and there of...
They've got some talented players.
There was on Friday night.
Seriously talented
players. They have some seriously talented players still unavailable to Stuart Hooper.
Very true.
A world-class back row. Underhill, Faletau, Mercer, Anthony Watson.
They're globally important, right?
Thokunasinga.
What they don't seem to have is a fly half that's going to threaten the line and unleash these backs.
Although Priestley did score a great 20-yard try.
I mean,
but that was maybe his one run of the night.
The other thing he said, which I get it, I get why you say it, and I'm sort of not that damning of it, but this idea of, well, it's basics, isn't it? If you just got our basics right, naturally we'll beat Clermont. No, you won't. You will not beat Clermont just because you can rook with a bit of precision. You will not.
98% rook complete.
Yeah. That's not going to beat Clermont. You lost against Clermont because you don't have a strategy worthy of playing in a European Cup. That's why you lost. That's how you score tries. They were actually quite good defensively, and let's be honest. Until the last 15 minutes, wasn't there?
To broaden it out, I actually think this is why rugby's amazing, is because actually there's not a great deal of, between players, and sometimes you can have lesser players one to man for man performing better. It actually the whole organisation, the whole organisation, everything from the chef, cleaners, right through to the top players. Exactly.
That's all
that does
Exit
come
cheeks.
Out. It does come out there on the pitch in tiny little mini 1%. And I think that's when you see Quinn's, you know, losing it at the end, and Bath capitulating in the last 15 minutes versus Exeter grinding it out.
Yeah.
Is
that, and Saracens actually being in a position where they could have tied the game.
The whole culture thing is putting the horse, the cart before the horse. You get your culture by being good at rugby, not vice versa. Although there are bits of culture you need to get in place before you get the rugby.
I think that's kind of contradicting what the point I was making. Actually, I'd say it's the other way around.
Well, you need the culture. And
you need the rugby stuff, but
it's complex.
But everything else, to use a Hooperism, globally does contribute in a tiny, tiny thing to the big picture pitch in that 80
I just think
minutes.
Like you can't say that we lost against Claremont, we would have beat Claremont if our basics were right. No, you wouldn't, because you need more than basics to beat a world class team. That is nonsense.
Yes. Definitely. I agree with that.
Bath will lose comfortably in Claremont. That's going to be Pain Arena. The Hurt Arena, Andy Farrell said.
It will be a good opportunity for some young players to get...
Hurt.
to get experience...
Get me the concussion, boys!
...of that environment.
Do you know what? It's a great... See, if you're a Bath fan going out there, I'd love to be going out there. It's such a fun place to go and watch rugby, just as a spectacle. Enjoy it. Enjoy the spectacle.
Enjoy it, boys.
Quinns went out there and did a good job last year, so...
Yeah.
Can happen. Semi-final of the Challenge Cup, quarter-final.
Semi-final.
And do you know who else did a really good job out there? They still lost. Saracens. They lost, I think, within 7 points or something after that absolute hiding that they received at home.
Oh, yeah, the hammering at home. Where that season where they had all the injuries.
And they picked themselves up and did all right.
What's the next most interesting pool? The Saracens Munster one is the next, and Racing.
Oh,
yeah.
This is such a fantastic pool.
Weirdly, Saracens are not in a bad position.
They're really big. Again, going back to Phil's point, bonus points.
Yeah, when they lost, I thought, oh, that's it, the end. But it's not.
So Saracens can... So Racing and Munster, they're unbeaten, but they drew against each other at Thomond Park. So Racing are on 12 points because they've got two bonus point wins. Munster on 11 points.
Yeah.
Saracens are then on 6 points. But Saracens have travelled away to both Racing and Munster.
Yes.
So if they can pick up three bonus point wins, or even three wins, they'll be on somewhere between 18 and 21 points.
That looks like a runner-up margin.
Yeah, which they're not out of it yet. Now, it was...
Can you imagine if they won the Champions Cup?
Yes, I can.
This season.
Imagine it. I can imagine...
Twitter would explode.
If they achieve that, I may as well just cross out and say they win the league. Because that's what happens. If they get top four, they win the league.
Potentially, yeah.
So, do you want to change your whiteboard prediction to just win a trophy?
See if it rubs out.
To win a trophy.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, we'll change it.
Saracens win a trophy. Saracens trophy. I'd be happy with that if you changed it to that.
Well, no, I won't be happy with that because it's possibly likely. Because JB's predictions always go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's not harm Saracens too much yet.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I'm mighty impressed by him. I mean, really impressed.
To contrast Gustard, Mark McCall said after this, losing 10-3, he said, I'm proud of the young guys. I'm really frustrated. Yeah. Really frustrated. That was his overwhelming takeaway.
Because they had chances. The lost line out when they get the penalty with no time left on the clock and they don't hit their line out.
Singleton did not have a good game.
He's having a bad season.
Yeah.
I don't think Don Brandt should be in the England squad. Singleton, I'm saying he shouldn't be in the England squad.
Who goes instead?
That's a good question.
It's like the reverse Cocker's law.
You've got Jamie George and LCD.
Yeah, definitely both.
100%.
Two in there.
Then, Weber's hurt his hand, so...
No Weber. Hartley's retired.
Is Tommy Taylor playing well yet?
Is he playing? Yeah.
No, I don't think he's playing either. What about
Dunn is playing Dunn better than Singleton.
Dunn is a good shout, actually.
Tom Dunn better than Singleton, definitely.
Tom Cruise?
I'd have Thacker ahead of Cruz, definitely.
Thacker should be in the England squad ahead of Jack Singleton.
There's no way he's getting into Eddie Jones' squad.
Well, we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
This pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Munster didn't play brilliantly, but Saracens didn't let him.
And this was an interesting demonstration of systems. So Saracens' defensive system held out as well as it ever would, despite missing... I mean, they still had, I think, 9 full-blown internationals in their 23.
Yep.
But despite missing 6 or 7 of the World Cup final-making England squad. So their defensive structures were very, very good, and they frustrated Munster for the whole of the game. The problem is their offensive structure, without the game breakers, without a Good or a Daly or a Liam Williams in the back three,
or a Farrell
controlling things at 10, or the Vunipolas, or Jamie George. Like, there's massive, massive names to be missing, and it hurt them going forward, and that's why they ended up with 3 points. And they
had
multiple times where they got into Munster's 22, they had multiple phases in Munster's 22, and they only once came away with points.
I think Jamie George was the biggest miss, purely because of what we said about Singleton. I thought Zikwe was awesome.
That's the best game I've seen him play.
I thought...
It was unusual as well to see Zikwe with 6 and...
Maro with... Whatever it is.
Yeah, Maro packing down at lock.
And I thought Maro's great as well. I thought Maro was really, really good. But ultimately, they just didn't have enough... You know, what the Vunipolas give them is a little bit more grunt when they need to go direct. They just missed that. And like you say, there's no edge. And that's a shame, because I actually thought they'd have enough with Lazowski playing out wide, because I think
Lazowski
he's
and Lewington.
Brilliant. And Lewington didn't really get in the game either.
No, neither of those two were properly able to get in the game going forward.
Yeah. Shame, but...
But Munster, it's not an easy game that for Munster to play.
Do they go full bore next week?
I wonder.
Full-blown Saris.
Yeah.
I wonder if they will. I always expected them to go, and as I said it last week, I always expected them to rest a lot of players for that game. They know, if they go full bore and they win this 5-point win, it's on. It is on for quarterfinals.
And the Premiership isn't looking... I mean, survival in the Premiership is not looking... It's not easy, obviously, but it's looking very achievable.
Who have they got next in the Prem?
I don't know.
I don't know, but
I think regardless, look at their squad. Look how many players they've left out and given a week off. They'll go full-blooded, and I can't wait. I'm working at this game. I cannot wait.
That will be a good game.
Saracens-Munster. It will be good. And I think if they go
full... Are we going to watch this, Phil?
I think if they go full-blooded, Saracens will win.
Where are we going to watch it?
Well, we have got a day's worth of drinking to...
We have, yeah. There's not many places in Manchester.
In North West London.
Sorry?
Don't fancy doing it in North West London.
I'd love to go to North West London, but just not on the agenda, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we've got some drinking to do.
Yeah, we've got
Saturday.
Some business to attend to.
Business.
Good.
Yeah.
Saracens Bristol. When they come
back. Prem.
At the Alliance.
Alliance. The other game in Pool 4 is not really worth... mentioning
other than
the first 37 seconds
you wait for one kung fu kick to the head for all these years, and then two come along in the space
what
of a few
do you
weeks
know? The only
a thing carbon I, copy of Paolo Adogwu.
The only thing I like about this game, and the only reason it's even remotely relevant, I like watching the Ospreys get beaten. I just think it's about time that they get beaten to the point that they do no longer exist, and long may this continue. So good.
And it's going to be the Hurt Arena for Ospreys next week.
I mean, let's have a look at the Ospreys team. I mean, I don't know if they've got any injuries.
I saw they had
Adam Beardbray. Where's Alan Wynne? Where are all these guys they pay mega money to?
Marty McKenzie was playing.
Yeah,
they got to save him for a big game against Southern Kings in front of 500 people.
Was playing. Wonderful.
Bradley Davies. Lydia.
I mean, they have some players. Who occasionally play.
They have some players. They have 23 players.
Why do they even bother as an organisation? They're pathetic.
So I've genuinely seen nothing from this game. I've seen a couple of the Racing tries, but the only other thing I've seen is the Dan Evans red card, which I just don't like. I don't like that. That for me should be chalked up as a rugby incident. And I went through it in a lot more detail when we had Adogwu.
Yeah, I totally agree.
The laws are all written.
Can I just point out to everybody listening, Phil is saying this. This is me or JB. This is Phil saying this. I totally agree, Phil.
I'd like to think I'm always very sensible on these things. This it's so. For one, the laws are written to protect the guy catching the ball. They're not yes. written to protect the tackler. And there are other incidents in the past that have happened this way round where the guy who gets a boot to the face gets a penalty given against him because he's making contact with the player in the air. And this one in particular, this one even more than the Odogwu one, he's drop ball. He's falling backwards. If his leg doesn't go up, he falls backwards and lands on his own head. Like, where's his the care to himself?
I know we've just had two of these, but I'm willing to say I don't care enough because I hope it will never happen again, and therefore I don't have to think about it.
Fine. Maybe. Maybe. We'll see.
I don't like the red card for this either.
Yeah. But it was...
It's not for Ospreys, so it's fine.
Yeah, and it's not changed the game.
It's not going to win, will it? Dan Evans wasn't the difference between Ospreys and Racing.
Yeah. So, Ospreys will have a great fun day out in Paris next week.
Yeah, I mean...
Go and play in one of the best stadiums in the world.
I really need to go to that stadium.
Yeah. You need to have a word with the BT Sport schedules.
Like, do they just save it for, like, the B-list talent, Tim? Or
why,
how can you...
Yeah.
Moving on, other pools of interest.
I think Sale's pool is relatively... Well, it was until today.
Yeah, Glasgow Warriors win was important for the pool.
And that did open it up again. Yeah, the Glasgow win meant that we could have ended today had Sale managed to pull off a win with three teams in contention.
Problem is, Sale not going to win at La Rochelle, and they probably won't win at Exeter.
I can see them winning at La Rochelle.
Can you?
Because La Rochelle aren't going to...
Yeah, La Rochelle are out.
Okay. Well, I mean, if they get two wins out of the next three, maybe.
No, they need to win three.
The Sale have got to get three wins.
They've got to get three
You've
wins.
You've got to get
to
18 points.
Do you reckon?
So I think the bonus point that they got against Exeter at home today was just enough of a thread of hope. If they hadn't got the bonus point, I think it's all. But they know they can win three games, maybe one without a bonus point.
Tell you what, if I was a Sale fan, I'd be livid about today's result. I'd be absolutely...
Well, how do you feel then? Because if you're imagining how Sale fans would feel, I don't care about that. I want to know how you feel.
Well, I mean, I don't think my feelings on this are globally important. But I think what a Sale fan would say is, I mean, it's not often, is it, that you can chalk down a loss to one particular player. But you can definitely chalk up this loss to one particular player.
One player didn't have a good game, who didn't have a good game against Glasgow a few weeks ago.
I'm not even sure he wants to be a professional rugby player at this point. I mean, the effort... I'm going to let him off for not scoring that try. Because we were talking about this before the
podcast.
You
haven't even said who you're talking about for anyone.
Marland Yard. In case you didn't know, Marland Yard. Right. I let him off for that try because I think Simmons did a remarkable job. And
amazing defence from Sam Simmons.
Yeah. And Yard's a big, powerful bloke, and if he can't get over from that range, not very many people can. So, fine. And anyone can drop the ball. Fine. There again, he doesn't just need to dot it down. It's not that
he
difficult.
Got it over the line. He did the hard part.
He's kind of spinning. He's kind of...
That's his job!
Being spun by Sam Simmons.
His actual job is to score tries in those situations. Denny would have scored. Byron would have scored.
Chris Ashton would have scored. Byron. I think Chris Ashton would have scored.
Probably would have.
He's such a good
finisher. Byron would have 100% score. But that's not what got me. What got me were the two phases of play on his wing, and he failed to make tackles both times. Now, as Austin Healy pointed out, I think it's Austin Healy.
Ben Kay.
You know, he was put under pressure because of the kick, and there was a gap between the defensive line, and it exposed him. But he was falling off tackles. I mean, Diamond should have got him off within 30 minutes. Just a lack of effort. I've not been so disappointed for Sale fans for a long time.
The defensive read from him on Hogg for the penalty try was an almost exact carbon copy of his missed defensive read on DTH Van der Merwe in the Glasgow game. He shoots up into the space just adjacent to the guy that is catching the ball and running through.
So frustrating because he is so good. Like, he is such a talented player, such a good player. By the way, in terms of like rugby ability, I mean, the guy can play can play 13. He started off at 13 for London Irish. He can actually play a multitude of positions, but he doesn't apply himself.
Is it the old PSVs? Rule.
It might be the PSP.
Too rule. Talented to be any good.
Yeah, I think so.
And in fairness to him, he is coming back from a horrific knee injury.
Yeah, but in fairness to Sale, right?
Massive
so Sam Simmons. No, not as bad as that.
Yeah, but in fairness to Sale, They do have a bloody cavalcade of incredible wings.
Solomona on the bench, McGuigan as a... As a reserve. Warming up reserve. One of the...
He is. Barry McGuigan, right? Hear me now, believe me later, is 100% Sale's best winger. Now, I don't mean that he's going to be the best on any given day because there's a lot of talent. But in terms of actually showing up, making sure that you're available, playing week in, week out.
The effort that he puts in.
Yeah. Never making a bad decision, really.
Yeah.
So, like Ian Whitten was on... Ian Whitten was on Exeter's left wing today. And he's kind of similar profile of player. Just...
And puts his body on the line.
Do you know who I thought of the other day? Someone that we've not discussed for ages. I wasn't even sure he was still playing professional rugby. We've not spoken about him for so long.
This could be anyone.
James Short.
Oh, I saw you tweet about James Short.
Yeah, James Short.
So I saw he was playing for the, what were they called, the Cavaliers?
Braves,
Cavaliers. Is that Worcester?
I
saw he was playing for them.
So apparently,
but then Exeter do have a lot of talent.
Or Worcester's third team called the Roundheads,
Cavaliers and Roundheads.
So apparently the story on him is this is serious. He was cutting firewood and sliced open his hand, which sounds very similar to
Ewan Murray.
Who did exactly the same thing. So I guess my advice is, if you're a professional rugby player, buy pre-cut logs.
I was talking to a chap at work who used to play a bit of rugby in North Wales.
Oh, yeah. Which team?
No. He used to play at Chester as well.
Okay.
And who very recently almost chopped his finger off in a Ewan Murray and a James Short style incident with a tomahawk or a little handheld axe.
Do you know the advert I couldn't stand watching? Do you remember the Cronenberg advert?
Saison 65.
Yeah, and everyone was put off whatever they were doing because I think there's a bottle of Cronenberg being poured into a glass. And one of the scenes is a butcher and he's holding his finger over a bit of meat and cleaning it. I couldn't watch it. It makes me feel ill.
Who was the player? Was it... I want to say Ed Slater, but I might be wrong. Who sliced... didn't play for like 4 weeks. His hand open cutting a frozen bagel.
Yes, with a bread knife.
Bread knife, yeah.
Do you know? Yeah, it was Ed Slater with a bagel. But one of the most common knife wounds in the UK.
Oh yes,
is one of the, a very very common, incredibly middle class injury that I can imagine rugby players might risk themselves.
Oh, so it's not in Star City, Birmingham.
No, it's not. It's trying to get the stone out of an avocado, slicing through with an.
I tell you what, it's lucky that oysters are more widely consumed in the UK.
Oh, one of the things that it really gets to me. So, people using an oyster glove, a chainmail glove. You often see people slip and catch the glove, which is fine because you've got a chainmail glove on. We were at a food market in Madrid when we had our weekend in Madrid. And there were two blokes in there serving oysters with no chainmail glove on. I was like, you've got to be bloody confident in your own skills to be doing that.
Yeah, I don't fancy getting stabbed in the hand whilst serving seafood.
It's the force, it's the pressure in and the twist as well.
This is like... Right, this is... I'm sorry, we'll get back on...
I never shock my own oysters. Yeah. I refuse to.
This is like... I don't know if you ever watched these videos... when you watch baristas, and I do this just to annoy myself.
When they normally send them to me.
Yeah.
Watch this, 5 minutes in, you're going to lose your mind.
Right. And they say, the perfect amount of pressure to tamp coffee is £5. And and the way you tamp coffee is it's the elbow pointing down through the wrist, and then you're tamping the coffee. Well, if it's that precise, it matters that much. Get a machine to do it. And I can't help but think that tricking oysters should be a machine job. This is not a human job.
I love the fact that he puts himself through it. Watches it to big time.
Look at this, I'm not going to get annoyed. This.
I love it.
If JB didn't want to get angry, he would not go on Twitter.
Yeah, well, what are the pulls have we got? What are the pulls?
Well, no, one reason why Sale, the only reason why Sale deserved to lose, aside from making errors and not finishing when they should have done, they gave it a good crack, but is because at the stadium they played a song on the PA at halftime.
I know what it is. I know what it is because they've been playing it in corporate.
No, I don't think they have.
I think they have.
Hi, I'm Baby Shark Brooklyn.
Playing in corporate.
They play this at halftime.
Oh, no. Oh no.
Come on.
Baby Shark Brooklyn. This Grandma Shark. Oh,
no. Oh, no.
No, it's the Baby Shark song.
Baby
I don't know what it is. You know,
Shark.
Baby Shark.
You realise you're at a stage of life when you're in a stag do and you're humming Baby Shark and the guy sitting next to you is, you've got kids too. Like, it's one of those things. Yeah, they've been playing that in the corporate section for a few weeks now. A few months. And it just bemused bankers.
Oh, yeah. God.
I mean, I understand. They're called the Sharks. Great, well done. But no.
I agree with you.
And, you know, and anyone who has a problem with Sweet Caroline by, what's his name, Neil Diamond, want to go to the AJ Bell at halftime. Well, that said, I was impressed by the stadium and getting out of it.
It's a great stadium.
I still prefer Regency Park. Still prefer Regency Park.
Yeah. Haywood Road would be good. Nice and convenient for me right now.
I'm trying to think. Oh, there is one other thing that I'd like to mention about this game. That both those hookers were super.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Yeah.
And Mullet-Dicky was immense.
I mean, they were both superb.
And they make a real problem for their teams, both of them, because they're just not very easy to replace. You can't have one.
So physical.
Yeah, I don't know how
they are animals, aren't they? Yeah.
Unless they play on the same team and you get one. I mean, I wonder when one tackles the other, if they are just looking at themselves, because they're actually similar sizes too.
Yeah,
the LCD's a little bit
taller.
Bigger.
Yeah,
bigger. Actually. I think they both look like they could absolutely shred playing guitar in a death metal band.
No, they were absolutely superb.
I love on the two of them the collision in the second half down the touchline, which I thought the referee handled superbly as well, because the referee didn't call it, the touch judge called it check. Check that. They checked it, they went upstairs, and on one glance it looked like it could have been a shoulder charge, but referee dealt with it exactly right. There was an attempt to wrap.
Yep.
He didn't hit the head initially. It was chest on chest.
Bad technique upright.
And then the trailing arm comes round, kind of hits him in the head. It's a penalty. It's poor technique. Move on.
And do you know what I like?
It was good, well handled.
The exchange as well is Cowan Dickey saw him off just for some physicality. Yeah. Steps in, bang, have that. I can't remember his name now.
Acker.
Acker goes flying, gets straight to his feet and steals the ball.
Yeah.
Penalty. But then
it's taken
if you
back.
Were going to have a rugby, a premiership or European UFC fighter, then I think LCD and Acker van der Meer. In fact, hookers generally, because Camille Schat would be one of the ones you'd think.
Yeah, I'd say he's pretty good at boxing, just from very, very limited watching of Sale Shark's social media. Cooper Woolley.
Oh, really?
He seems like a seriously hard man.
He looks mean now with the beard and the big head.
Well, on that one, was it Ellis Genge? No, it was Anthony Watson has been on Twitter today saying, I don't know what prompted it, but he said that he wants to see James Haskell versus Ellis Genge at a boxing match. He said it would be a must.
Well,
so firstly, who would win that one between the baby Rhino and Hask?
Hask.
Genge.
No, not even close.
For me.
Not even
I go Genji in a kind of in a Tyson fashion.
I think if it was a boxing match, I might be totally wrong on this. If it's a boxing match, Genji wins.
No.
If it's MMA, if it's more technical groundwork, Hask wins.
Here is my thinking. Haskell's a massive. Well, they're both massive men, so let's chalk that off. But as a pure sporting contest, I would say Hask is a slightly better athlete, and I bet he'll be better conditioned.
He's not playing anymore.
Yeah, but he's training for this exact.
Well, he's just gone on a. I mean,
true. Actually, no, he's just gone on the jungle.
He's just but I think that basically now that's what boxers will do to cut weight is they'll go and eat kangaroo bollocks for a couple of weeks. He's in good nick.
He's always been in fairly decent nick, has.
Yeah,
he's got unbelievable natural fitness anyway. He works like a demon. You're gonna have to work bloody hard in order to outwork Haskell.
Yeah.
So give me Hask.
That'd be a good fight. I mean, those two, Acker and. Mullet-Dicky going at it would be pretty tasty.
Yeah.
Because they are.
It's actually very,
physical.
Very small.
So short, isn't it?
Yeah, so I've been in a lift.
Are you JB on the Egg Chasers podcast calling Acker van der Meer a dweeb?
No, absolutely not. But his hands feel like he's just shaking granite.
Yeah.
Powerful hands. So.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The other game in this pool, I've only seen the highlights of this, but this is a very good win given the position that they're in for Glasgow. So Glasgow travelled to La Rochelle, not an easy place to go.
Nope.
Historically. They've not been playing well in the tournament so far. But La Rochelle came out of the blocks and scored some lovely tries, brilliant handling, playing how they were playing last season and last few seasons.
How are they getting on in the league?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. I think I think that being as they were the two clubs from the UK linked, I think whoever finishes in the runner-up spot behind Exeter should get dibs on Nakara.
Oh yeah, who's available, but not going to sale.
Yeah, well
allegedly.
No. Diamond has said, Steve Diamond today said to me when I asked him, in a bit of the interview which didn't go out, because anyway, it doesn't matter.
That's just inside baseball.
I said, is he on your Christmas list? He went, he would be, but he's asking for too much money.
He is asking for too much money.
But Faf de Klerk was not coming to sale. Marlon Jard was not coming to sale. So it could also mean that he's already signed.
Yeah, my guess is, I think they're serious when they say he's too much money.
I think so.
You know, thinking about how much he's asking for, it's a lot for, you know, let's say what's remaining.
It's not a lot for Europe's best lock.
Okay, this is interesting. How good do you think he is?
Was he not European Player of the Year nominee last year?
Was he?
He should be a nominee. He's if not the best, he's top two or three in his position.
If he was English, would he be in the England team? Yes.
Yes. That is a stacked England team.
I mean, better than Cruis?
Yeah.
I'd have him and Itoje. Yeah. If he was English.
If he was Irish, he'd be in with James Ryan. If he was Welsh, he'd be in with Alan Wynne-Jones. If he was Scottish, he'd be in with Johnny Gray.
He'd play number eight if he was Scottish.
If he's English, he'd be in with...
He'd be captain.
Number eight and captain if he was Scottish.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I think he's a unique talent. When I think about him, I'm just thinking, like, you've got to build your team to use him. He's not the reason I mentioned Cruis is because he's just not a natural replacement for what George does.
Totally different type of player.
Yeah, so you've got to make allowances for that and maybe pair him with Anatoji or with whoever it is.
Someone who brings real work rate.
Which is odd, because if you paired him with Itoje, he would be a direct replacement.
He's that good that you would actually pull Marrow to one side, for example, and go, look, to get the best out of Leone, I just need you to hit a few more rucks, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
just get hitting rucks, because he'll do all the offloading.
I
think he's unbelievably talented.
Yeah.
He's Olympic gold medal winner as well. He played sevens.
He is very good.
How many top level locks could play highest level sevens and just transition from like in the middle of season?
Name me one other.
None.
There must be another.
No.
Has Victor Vito ever played lock?
He's definitely not a lock.
He's not.
He's massive. He could play lock.
He could play lock. He's not played lock.
But he definitely could play.
Okay, another one. Israel Flau is 6'5". He's tall enough to play lock. He could play international sevens.
Now, yeah.
Do you want to just mention Falau briefly?
Should we do it right at the end?
Do it at the end.
That's a great tease, that, Phil. People are going to be hanging on for that. So next week's fixtures, Exeter will beat Sale at home. Steve Diamond did say after the game that he will send pretty much the same team down to Sandy Park.
Yeah.
So
play Barry McGuinn, damn it.
That bonus point might just be enough to give them a little bit of hope in the other match.
Tiny bit of hope.
In the other match,
Glasgow will beat La Rochelle at home. And that will put Glasgow in good stead. Yes. They'll be on 12 or 13 points with two games to play. So they will be well placed to get a run-up spot.
And who haven't we talked about?
So we've not touched Pool 1, which saw Leinster in the end hammer Northampton.
That's a good game. Let's talk about that one.
That was a good game.
I love this game because it kind of gives you an idea how much more Northampton have to do.
Yeah.
So let's just say, for instance, Northampton played at, say, 9 out of 10. They probably did that for about 10 minutes and they had the beating of Leinster. But what Northampton needs to learn now is it's not about playing 9 out of 10 for 10 minutes. It's about doing what Leicester did, which is 8 out of 10 for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
And they just didn't drop off. They didn't get threatened. They just carried on.
But the eight out of 10s don't... aren't. Well, I think that... I know what you're saying. Leinster have a base level of 80 that they never drop below, but they have little moments of 10s regularly.
Yeah, where Lama's running through and Ring Rose and...
I mean, they are just such good, consistent performers. And I honestly thought that Northampton had the beating of them going into half-time. I thought, this is really, really competitive. Dan Biggar's kicking his goals.
Yeah, but how many games this weekend have we seen that? I mean...
Yeah, Bath Clermont is a great example.
The last 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Good teams.
I don't know how it's going to pan out next week with Northampton. I expect them to actually do a bit better. Now they've got an idea of what the standard is.
Is it the RDS or the Aviva?
I don't know.
I know the last home game before Christmas, they have the Aviva one, but I don't know because they normally have the inter-province games, don't they?
We went to one about this time of year.
In the Aviva?
In the Aviva.
It was 14th of December.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
So next week, exactly.
See, I actually think because of the way that Northampton got beat and because of the, let's just call it the physical grind of Leinster, they didn't give them any opportunity at the ruck. They slowed Northampton's ball down so efficiently and so effectively at the ruck, and their set piece was so much better as the game went on. I worry that this will be another beat down for Northampton. I don't think Northampton will improve. And the final score, 16-43 to Leinster.
Yeah.
I think it'll be similar.
I think they'll do better.
Well, think about it from Leinster's point of view. They can start a win in next week at home in front of a big crowd. They can then start thinking about what seeding they have or which players they want to rest and rotate.
Yeah, and Leinster now will be going for seed number one.
Yeah.
So they've got 3 wins, 2 out of 3 bonus point wins. They will win next week, I'm fairly confident. Yeah. And then they'll be playing... They'll just have to play Lyon and Benetton, who are done and dusted, and they'll get 2 5-point wins.
Oh, by the way, yeah. Lyon, their first European
first
win.
First ever European win.
Congratulations.
And a bonus point, even though they didn't seem to know what gets them a bonus point. Have you seen that?
No.
So they were 3 tries up, which in the French league would get them a bonus point.
They had...
With 15 minutes to go, they got a penalty 5 yards out from under the sticks. They should have either scrummed it or even tap and go. Just do anything to get the 4th try. They took the 3 and played on it. It was only 10 minutes after that.
Carl Ferns probably grabbed them and went, any
stand-up players in this game for Leon?
The silverback.
Carl Ferns, obviously. So, yeah, congratulations, guys.
Well done, Leon.
Against your beloved
Benetton.
First
win, bonus point win.
Yeah,
So how many points are Northampton on?
Northampton are on.
So out of this one.
Leinster 14. Northampton are on 9 points.
Yeah, so it's starting to look dicey, isn't it?
It's
no 2 5-point wins.
They have to get 2 5-point
wins.
I fully expect them to get nothing next week.
Yeah, totally.
The best result is 4 try bonus points. They're not going to be within 7. No chance. They might be able to get 4 moments of magic. But then they should be able to get
still
two,
in contention.
Yeah,
to
they
get,
should be able to get 2 5-point wins against Lyon and Benetton.
It could end up being Saracens or Northampton for a runner-up spot. Could end up being one of those English sides.
Potentially, yes.
And the final pool
is Pool 5. So the 2 games today. Was it 2 games today? Yeah.
Yeah.
Gloucester hosted Connacht and Toulouse hosted Montpellier.
So Gloucester beating Connacht, does that put them in contention? How's the pool look now after the game?
So Toulouse are first with 13, won 3 from 3.
They're going through.
Albeit only 1 bonus point.
Yeah.
Gloucester, importantly, so they've only won 1, but they've got 3 bonus points. Mm. So Gloucester on 7, Montpellier 1 bonus point on 5, and Connacht have got 4 points. The 4 points.
Now, it's not often, is it, when you watch rugby that you see something which you've never seen before. But I've never seen anyone do what Danny Cipriani did with that little kick.
Did he mean it?
I'm certain he did.
I'm certain he meant to do a crossfield kick. I'm not certain he meant to grub it.
More impressive because I think he deliberately did it, but it wasn't premeditated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it wasn't a planned call.
It sounds like it's an oxymoron. I think he went to do a crossfield kick and at the very last second realised the defence were up on him and just kicked it along the ground instead.
Yeah. But that the bit that doesn't make sense, the bit that I don't get why he would do the grubber rather than the crossfield is because the defence were up, it could have easily ricocheted or hit one of the defenders.
Yeah.
If you go aerial, you totally avoid that risk. It just didn't make sense to do it as the grubber.
It was high risk, high reward, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. Much higher risk than necessary as well. Okay, that's the bit.
When you think about exiting from year 22, there's a few golden rules according to genius coach Jamie Peacock, also happens to be head coach of Tok H. And he's right, which is you don't play in front of your posts for obvious reasons, and then you exit. You certainly do not grubber
in front of your posts. With an on-rushing defence.
Yeah, you definitely don't do that.
I can't believe... It did look like he intended to do the crossfield. I just can't believe he would intend to do the grubber.
Do you know what makes me think it was deliberate? On the replays, he does not look in any way disappointed with what he's done. He's like, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like, if I had spooned it off my foot, you'd instantly see my hands go towards my head. And,
no, what have you done? Beardmore, not again.
Yeah. An F coming in, from my lips. he didn't mean to do that. But he just looked like he meant to do it.
But Danny Cipriani is used to everything going his way.
Yes.
So maybe he just always, whether he intends...
Do you remember the little dink he did for Wasps? He tried to dink from underneath his own post and regather. Somehow lost it and the opposition scored. Do you remember that?
I can't remember that, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. The man's a genius. And I actually thought he played very well.
He did.
And I've had it in the back of my mind that maybe he's lost a bit of interest in Gloucester. Maybe he's not where his head needs to be. Not according to this performance.
I'm hoping that this one is a bit of a turning point on that one. He hasn't been playing well.
And there was talk a few weeks ago of him being struggling with an injury, a calf or ankle injury. Yeah. So maybe that has been plaguing him more than people have said. Just on this game, so how fast is the young lad, Lewis Rees-Zammit?
Lewis Rees-Zammit, he's pretty
quite
sharp.
Fast?
Very, very fast.
Yeah.
Him and Thorley are...
There you go, Wales. I mean, total respect to Johnny McNichol. Get Lewis Rees-Zammit in. Don't worry about a 29-year-old New Zealander. Get a 19-year-old Welshman in.
And he's a big, strong boy as well, Rees-Zammit.
I wouldn't worry about it. Look, Welsh rugby is not worth talking about until we see them after the Six Nations without Gatland. I don't know what the point is.
So next week's fixtures. I don't see Gloucester qualifying.
Excuse me.
They've got a chance, but probably not. No. To be one win in this position is tough.
Yeah.
It's very tough.
And that is the pool stages with the games next week. The real Peach games next weekend, Saracens v Munster.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yes, it is.
It's going to be so good. That
is the big one.
That is the big one.
Montpellier most... hosting Toulouse.
Yes,
Montpellier have to get a win. They need a big win, actually, to do anything.
Probably most of the other games, the result will probably be not a formality, because no result is ever a formality, but like, for example, Leinster at home. Should beat Northampton comfortably.
Yeah, Exeter should beat Sale.
Well, hang on. Just on that one, change the wing and Exeter lose comfortably at the AJ Bell. So I think Sale have got the recipe to beat them. I think they will.
So Sale finished the game much much better. And had they scored earlier when they had all that pressure on Exeter's line?
Poor Curtis Langdon. He did so much work leading up to knocking on the ball. No. Every other carry was Curtis Langdon.
So, had they scored, it could have been different. Also, I think a big turning point in this was Hogg going off for the HIA.
Yeah.
It changed Exeter's performance. It changed their go forward from the back.
Yeah, but even if in the case that Harlequins win against Ulster or Sale beat Exeter, for example... I don't think I see either of those teams going on and qualifying. Although
I don't.
It's a real tough
It's mathematically possible.
It is possible.
And the Quins win against Ulster is actually, that's the one opportunity, because if Quins beat Ulster, they're only 2 points behind them, which is quite remarkable given that Ulster have won 3 from 3 up to this point. But they still have to play Claremont, which they're getting nothing from. So you can't see Quins going through at this stage.
No. So I think that's Saracens Munster's the big one. But I'm just, what are the other fixtures? Montpellier to lose.
Yeah.
Those are the two big ones.
Other than that, Racing host Ospreys. Ugh. Ugh. Bath travel to Claremont. That's going to be bad. La Rochelle go to Glasgow. La Rochelle with one.
I mean, there'll be good games of rugby.
So far. I'm not actually sure Bath going to Claremont will be that good a game of rugby.
I mean, there'll be some very.
There'll be some big scores.
Yeah, there'll be
Ospreys going to Racing. There'll be a big score.
Might get to see Benders actually with a decent surface under his feet, getting trying to rip it open. That pitch is ridiculous.
So David Flatman tweets something quite interesting during the game when people saying like that pitch isn't particularly good, and he says along the lines of that they got rid of the groundsman and now they contract it out. So the old groundsman apparently had a real good grasp on how the pitch was, and it was a very good surface. There again, I seem to remember some being some horrible Friday night surfaces there.
Yeah, there has been some really bad games.
And it's been particularly bad weather-wise. I mean, I've played on the rack a few times.
All right.
uni games, and it's and I've gone to watch a ton when I was living there in Bath, and it's, between the months of November and January.
Is it as bad as Talk H, which is under about 4 foot of water?
No, not so much.
But it's close to a river.
It is. I think if there was one pitch in England, which, and I'm not a massive fan, I'd prefer grass over artificial, but if you were going to have some sort of hybrid or artificial surface, the rec is the one that actually demands it.
What's that stadium situation at the moment? Have they got permission?
Yeah, they've got planning permission. I just don't think about it, because
It'll take a long time.
It's been a while.
I think someone in one of the flats died recently, so it got the next stage further forward.
It's like, and I don't know if this is just like urban myth or whatnot, but the Aviva Stadium has got that horrible little stand because some annoying solicitor has decided, right,
light,
no,
it'll block my light block into my this in, into this house.
There are some seriously expensive houses around there. Big Georgian townhouses. So I think that I've been told that as well. When I was at
We got told it by the same person.
I think I was there with a friend of the pod, CJ, actually.
Yeah, at the same time.
I was there to watch Ireland. So we might have been told it at that point as well. Yeah. Might have been told it by Joe Heron.
Maybe you told me.
I might have told you, because I went with CJ to watch Ireland versus the All Blacks. One of the games that Ireland lost against the All Blacks as well.
Ah, dear.
So that's Champions Cup. In other news, just very briefly, Charles Piatow and Luke Morihan re-sign.
Oh, brilliant.
What a back three with Semi Radradra.
Yeah. Amazing signings. Maybe the most amazing bit of business that Bristol is in at the moment is their new training base. Have you seen it?
I've seen it on some of their pre-season stuff.
It looks awesome. So there's some serious money. I mean, they are in this for the long haul.
Yeah. And I mean, those two, Piatow re-signing is huge. Another 2 years for Piatow. God, him and Radradra. That is going to be serious. And fantasy rugby draft next year with those two.
The Champions Cup with those three.
Those three.
We mentioned Haskell already. He's out of the jungle, and I haven't watched any of it, but all I've picked up is that he's not been very popular.
I got a text the other day from someone who knows, someone that you know from the Love Island pod, Nahor.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, have you met Haskell? I said, well, yes, I have, actually. And she is obsessed by James Haskell.
Mm.
And a lot of the girls in work are obsessed by James Haskell, and they quite like him.
Mm.
Big alpha male.
Big strong boy.
I think he's come across quite well, actually, from what I can say. I've not watched a single second of him.
Yeah, I've no idea.
So, look, I'm just making this up. I don't know.
He's out.
He's out.
Right. Tell me about Suliasi Vunivalu, Phil.
He is a 6'4"-ish, 100-plus kg, 24-year-old, Fijian-born, NRL winger.
So this is Australia going, we've lost one Tongan back three player. We better get another one in because our academy and pathway system is doing nothing. So we need another Islander.
I hope he's racist.
But it does look a bit like that. It does. I think he's signed for the Rebels. And no, Reds. Queens, I think he's signed. Yeah, from, I want to say, the Melbourne Storm. But anyway, tall, big, strong, very talented outside back, who is replacing someone who will not be playing for Australia, but might be playing rugby again at a club near you.
Yeah,
he's available.
Apparently,
Izzy Folau is available.
Apparently, Brisbane Broncos have made an unofficial approach, but they've got to go through NRL, the main NRL thing. So apparently, two teams are interested within the NRL, which would be fascinating.
Any team which should he is a sensationally talented player.
Yes, he is.
So I'm actually interested in. I genuinely don't know what Phil thinks. What you know? Let's not get into the weeds on this one, but you know, Folau came to a settlement with the ARU. Both parties made apologies
to each other for the hurt, for each other.
Yeah.
So at least it seems to be ending in some mildly amicable fashion.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your overriding thought on it? Because I know where JB stands. I know my own mind, so I know what I think.
I think Folau was an absolute moron for doing what he did. I think the ARU were probably right, given the previous water under the bridge, to release him. I hate people trying to stop him from speaking and shut his stuff down. But I actually think, based on what I know, the ARU have acted. So they've made the right decision based on their options. And as soon as Folau did what he did, that social media post, Instagram post, they had a very binary option. They can retain him, or they can cut him free. If they retain him, they lose what is their biggest sponsor and will find it hard to get any future sponsor. And that is the big driver for Australian rugby, because they losing Folau, you lose one of the most talented players in the world, possibly the single most athletically gifted player in the world. Mm-hmm. But you lose him for the next 2 or 3 years. He's 30 years old. He would have done one World Cup, possibly one more, and that's it. But by keeping him and losing the Qantas deal, and other big businesses would be a lot more reluctant to sponsor them and certainly sponsor them at the same level, you lose the next Folau, the Vunivalu, the Karevi, the Kurumbeti. You lose guys like Pocock, like Hooper. You lose guys like Beale, like Foley, all to Europe or NRL or Japan. And that is a business decision. It makes sense,
yeah,
because the consequences of losing, yes, all those future players are far greater than
business
losing Folau.
Decision based upon a moral issue.
It is
not a moral decision on a moral issue, which I've got no problem with.
Yeah,
I agree with
yeah,
you.
And it is, yeah, and it's almost the because it is a purely business decision. Or ARU should be looking at it purely as a business decision. It takes morals out of it from them. I mean, they can badge it up as the moral side of it to appease people.
I mean, I've actually softened on, do I think he should be fired? I mean, yeah, probably.
If you don't think of it as fired, and you think of it as which one of these two paths do the ARU choose? Risking losing sponsors or losing a player?
Well, I'm kind of beyond that, because I think we've had that sort of conversation over and over again. I'm fascinated by, well, two aspects here. Number one is the revisionist history of Folau, which is going around, which is he was a limited player. Which I think is a phenomenal. I mean, yes, he was limited, but Dan Carter couldn't particularly scrimmage. I guess he was limited too. I mean, he was world class at what he had to do.
Not even world class. Like he was at
maybe the best,
the very top world class.
Yeah. So
yeah, possibly the best international fullback ever.
Yeah.
Best in his position for the last 5 years. As I said before, possibly the most talented
and
player.
And a three-code.
Yeah.
Three-code star.
And, yeah. And also, just look at the amount of tries he scored. Yeah, that's not going to be bettered.
There can only be. I've not seen many people.
I have seen a fair few now.
I've not seen many saying that.
Like this revision. Have you been reading much Australian press? Because sadly, I have.
I have been reading about
this. You are a glutton for punishment, aren't you?
No, I've been reading quite a lot on this, so, but I've not seen that in the press. I've only seen it from a handful of people on Twitter. Yeah,
so that's the first thing, which I think is. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, like, how is. I mean, Raylene Castle. I don't think she needs to go because there's a big difference between being a useless culture warrior and being completely out of your depth at something like this, which can absolutely happen. She would not know. I mean, how can she possibly know how to deal with the firestorm, which is wokeness and social justice? And it's not really fair to expect her to know how to deal with that perfectly because it's so difficult.
And who could deal? This is one of the most contentious situations in rugby.
Yeah, but there is blame to go around. And I think she has to have... Yeah, and sorry, so just to finish off that point, how can she be expected to do that? I think there's enough in there to say she might be able to be fired, but on the other hand, is she a good enough sports administrator on the day-to-day, running a league, running leagues, running international teams, all that sort of jazz, which undoubtedly she is very good at. So just keep her on for that and say, okay, get on with your day job now, this whole nonsense of flowers is over. She's made some big mistakes, though. First of all, she re-signed the guy after it was clear he had these views. She didn't just sign him. She signed him to the biggest contract that the ARU had given out. Was there no due diligence? Was the only bit of protection a verbal agreement?
Yes. If so, that is all it was.
Yeah.
Well, verbal agreement, but also the rules of conduct that were appended to it.
Yes, but they drafted an addendum to the contract, which they wanted him to sign after he'd already signed the contract. So when he said no, I'm not signing that. It's like that is ridiculously stupid.
I mean, Phil, you deal with pipelines and whatnot.
I do.
On a small level contract, would you just accept someone's word that they're going to put in some pipes?
No, but construction has happened before contracts have been signed on a number of big schemes.
So, like,
you have there's agreements and then agreements.
Yeah. So I mean, and also I think that she's been weak. I think she was weak to sign him under the pressure that he's a damn good player. Then when this thing happened, she was weak to get rid of him when actually the right thing was to do was just suspend him on pay. And then she's weak again.
I think Phil was right. If you just think of it as a business decision, it makes sense. The only bit I don't like about it.
Well, there's no business decision, is there, in saying, "Hey, here is a known homophobe. We're going to make him the main."
No,
homos.
No.
Here's a Christian.
Sorry,
here's a man with Christian values.
Let me just put this another way. He was perceived by her, right, to be a known homophobe, judging by what she has said subsequent.
But there, again, a difference between a known homophobe and a homophobic act. Individual points.
Yeah, so to give this guy not just maybe say, look, here's half the money, maybe you don't take it, but there is a risk in signing. To make him your highest paid player and then the focal point of the Wallabies squad, that's insane.
I do understand all that. It's just, it's partly, this is the first time something like this has happened.
15 years ago, he would actually have to stand up on like national television and say
precisely.
Those things. It would
precisely.
Be so difficult.
So this is the first thing. So I think the sort of landscape's been drawn now because there are a lot of people that are just as devoutly religious, particularly from Pacific Island nations.
Yeah,
there's a lot.
We've got a lot. Rugby community. There's a lot of devout Christians,
and I think the line has been drawn now that. Just do not express that opinion anymore.
A few more things on Railing Castle. She claimed that the insurance may pay out.
Well, that's what
I've seen that she said they have got insurance. She's not said what it is.
The quote is may pay out, which implies to me she doesn't know what they're insured for, which is outrageous.
Okay. Yeah.
And the last one is a CEO should not be using quotes like... He was deserved to be called out. You're a CEO. You don't call people out. You deal with things in a...
This is what happens on social media, cancel culture and all the rest
call
of it. There is an outrageous way that people conduct themselves.
Of course.
Just one last thing on the flow, which I think this is an interesting... I use that phrase. interesting angle and complexity to the Australian rugby decision, which is, as you mentioned before, Tim... A huge number of the players in the Australian rugby community are Christian. A lot of people with Pacific Island heritage are Christian, and they do make up a large proportion. And if there was a backlash from all of those Christians against the ARU, and all of a sudden...
France would have no
rings. Karevi, Korobeti, Tanela Tupu, and all the rest of those supremely talented players, if they all said, well, hang on a minute, if I'm not going to work for an organisation that supports my values. That is the only thing that could actually have a worse effect from the business decision than losing all the sponsors. Yep. It was a balanced risk. Yeah. It was a considered risk.
I think the takeaway should be get off social media.
No, do what I do.
Just get off it. So,
do not do what Jay does.
No, do what I do. I have literally got rid of everyone. I've resisted doing it because I think it's a cheap way out. Just got rid of everyone on social media who makes me angry or who I do not want. I want to talk to.
That's why you're going onto YouTube and looking at annoying baristas just to get your kind of anger fix.
Like, I just can't deal with some of these accounts, which I'm not even going to say what they say. So I know who I want to speak to. That'll be fine. I'll only respond to people who are either nice or with a certain amount of followers, and everything else can just disappear.
I think I'm going to sack it off. It might be my new year. I think I literally might just delete them. I can't be arsed. It's the cost benefit analysis. I don't get enough from it to give a damn about all the crap.
I still love it.
I think there's do what I do. Don't engage.
Lurk
in the background unless I'm
in a secret account.
Unless I'm primed and ready to slide
Phil
into
L 35692.
But mark that down. Edit.
Yeah, edit. We'll edit that bit out, Phil. Honest. Right.
Right, we've done all next week's games, haven't we?
We have.
All of the Heineken Champions Cup.
The only other business I'll add is I tweeted a picture of a fella on a train. Would you have done in that situation? So
this is an interesting one, right?
So let me just, for anyone that didn't see, I'm at Cocker. He's at J Beardmore, by the way. But I tweeted a picture, which I covertly took on a train, of a guy on the table next to us. It was a cross-country train. Birmingham to Manchester. From Bristol to Manchester. I wasn't first class.
That's weird.
I was sorting myself out this time. So.
Okay.
I can, anyway, it doesn't matter. So there were people stood up in the vestibules and this guy had a bag on the seat next to him and he had all this paperwork out all over the table to the point that the seat next to him, someone could have sat in and they weren't. The guy that was opposite him, he had said to, I can't bend my legs. My legs hurt. I can't bend my legs. So this guy had his legs out straight in front of him. Then there was so much of his stuff on the table that the girl had to have her bag on her lap.
Wow. So someone tweeted me about this and said, where's Jay Beardmore in this situation? Why don't you get him to do... or something like that. And they don't understand this. If anyone would say anything, it would be you. It wouldn't be me. You're far more combative than I am. I've seen you. There was a guy driving through Chorlton and he got out of his car and he moved the road closure barriers out of the way. He got back in his car to drive through and there's loads of kids on the thing. Cocker goes in the middle of the road, puts the road barrier back in front of his car. If there's a man that's going to move the bag, it's not me. It would be you.
I did ask him to and he said, my man.
Anyway, enough of that. Yeah. Let's call it a day.
Yes, let's call it a day. Right. We'll be back after next week's European rugby. In the meantime, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, he's Jay Beardmore, I'm at Cocker, Phil is whatever we just didn't edit out
Phil
a minute ago.
Phil L35692.
There you go. He's all lurking in your DMs if you're lucky. Have a cracking week. We'll be back next Sunday.
Yep.
I'm trying to work out what the date is. Oh, it's the 15th next Sunday, 15th. Fine. We've got two more before Christmas. Great. We'll tell you what, I've got a couple of amazing Christmas present ideas for you for next week's podcast.
Ooh. Super.
Ready with that one. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.